He talked about stopping the wars. If you can, in this last 30 seconds that we have, talk about what it would mean for Native America, for Indian country, for this country overall, for Leonard Peltier to be granted clemency.
You know, all throughout the history of the treatment of Indian people by the United States government, it has been one of injustice. And the reality is how Leonard Peltier was treated in his prosecution and incarceration is consistent with how this country has treated Indian people. And that's why all of us see a little bit of ourselves in Leonard Peltier. And that's why we fight so hard for him. So this is about Leonard's freedom, but this is about justice for Indian people everywhere. This is about human rights for people everywhere. This is about paving a path forward that gives us the opportunity to have justice and begin to heal the relationship between the United States government and Indian people. And so this decision is massive. And I really hope that the President of the United States weighs this decision. If he releases Leonard Peltier, he will be forever known the president who did that.
Native American activist Nick Tilson, we're going to leave it there. Founder and CEO of NDN Collective, thank you so much. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Produced with Renee Feltz, Anjali Kamat, Mike Burke. I'm Amy Goodman.
Help me now, babe. Please. You gotta help me.
KB, oh, Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. December's Governance and Policy Committee meeting will be rescheduled for January 21st at 6 p.m. The meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Hey everyone, tune into Blues Junction Saturday, January 18th at 5 o'clock for a conversation and in-studio performance with one of Portland's iconic singer-songwriters, James Lowe. He's got a new release and it's called True. We'll sit down with him and have a chat. Maybe if we twist his arm, he'll play a song or two. Who knows? So again, it's Blues Junction Saturday, January 18th at 5 o'clock for a conversation with James Lowe.
Support for KBOO comes from KBOO members and Grendel's Coffee Shop, located at East Burnside and 8th Avenue in Portland, featuring coffee, tea, sandwiches, and more. Information at grendelspdx.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, below freezing temperatures are headed to the Portland metro area this weekend.
The Supreme Court upholds the congressional ban on the social media app TikTok.
And in international news, Israeli government officials approve the ceasefire deal with Hamas to begin on Sunday.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, January 17th, 2025. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Luna Winchester. The Portland and Vancouver areas are looking at below freezing temperatures this weekend. Multnomah County issued a cold weather advisory for Friday night, and forecasters say the next few nights could get into the mid-20s. That's pretty cold, but not cold enough for Multnomah County to open its warming shelters. They say it doesn't meet their criteria. The weather would have to get colder, wetter, or both in order to open the shelters. The Joint Office has been distributing extra clothing and blankets to unhoused residents in preparation. Officials say people should keep an eye out for people living on the streets who may need help. They say people can call the county non-emergency line and request a welfare check, at 503-823-3333. In Vancouver, local officials are opening up emergency warming shelters at Living Hope Church in St. Paul, Vancouver. Vancouver residents who need shelter or housing assistance can call the Council for Homeless at 360-695-9677. Another important tip when temperatures get below freezing is to stay hydrated. Marlo Mocht from Clark County Emergency Medical Services said, quote, "Particularly in the dry cold, people with limited access to water can become dehydrated because thirst cues decrease. But the body uses a lot of moisture to warm the air. People have fewer thirst cues in the dry cold," end quote. Officials across the Portland metro area say they'll make more services available if the weather forecast gets worse.
The Supreme Court unanimously ruled to uphold the federal law banning TikTok today. The ban will go into effect Sunday unless TikTok is sold by its China-based parent company. The ruling says that the national security risk posed by TikTok's ties to China is greater than problems with limiting free speech. The app has about 170 million users in the United States. A sale does not appear imminent, so come Sunday, new users won't be able to download it, and updates won't be available. The app will not disappear from existing users' phones, but it will eventually become unusable. However, the Biden administration said it will not enforce the law, leaving the decision to Trump, who promised he could negotiate a solution. The law did allow for a 90-day pause in the restrictions on the app if there is progress toward a sale. The Supreme Court said, quote, "Congress has determined that divestiture is necessary to address its well-supported national security concerns regarding TikTok's data collection practices and relationship with a foreign adversary," end quote. It added the decision does not violate petitioners' First Amendment rights. At least two justices, Sotomayor and Gorsuch, had some reservations about the court's decision, but went along with the others. Gorsuch wrote he was persuaded by the argument that China could get access to, quote, "vast troves of personal information about tens of millions of Americans," end quote. Digital rights groups slammed the ruling. The Washington-based Center for Democracy and Technology said, quote, "Today's unprecedented decision upholding the TikTok ban harms the free expression of hundreds of millions of TikTok users in the country and around the world," end quote. Content creators are also worried about the effect the TikTok ban will have on their businesses. The justices were told how difficult it would be to broker a deal, since Chinese law restricts the sale of the proprietary algorithm that has made the social media platform so successful. A lawsuit filed last year by Kentucky complained that TikTok is designed to be addictive and harms children's mental health.
The Israeli government approves the ceasefire and hostage exchange for Gaza, paving the way for the fighting to pause on Sunday. The government ministers deliberated for hours on Friday before approving the agreement. That means on Sunday, the exchange of Israeli hostages and Palestinian prisoners can begin. Hamas will free 33 captives over the course of a few days, and Israel will free 1,000 Palestinians. International aid agencies will be able to scale up their work under the ceasefire, and Palestinians who have fled their homes can return. The Israeli military will withdraw from Gaza in phases two. The six-week ceasefire agreement sets the stage for further phases of agreement, including the rebuilding and governing of Gaza. 110 people have been killed in Israeli bombings since the ceasefire agreement was first announced earlier this week.
Providence Health and the Oregon Nurses Association have been exchanging bargaining proposals, but the largest nurses' strike in Oregon history isn't over. Nurses and doctors have been on the picket line for a week at eight hospitals across the state. They intend to stay on strike until they reach a deal with the hospital system. The main issues at stake are low wages, safe staffing levels, and health insurance for employees. Unionized nurses say the hospital system is focused on squeezing out extra profit wherever possible. They also say that the state's safe staffing law has limits that are too high for them to meet, and instead, the staff-to-patient ratio should be decided by what care patients need. Providence has returned proposals to the nurses' union as of this morning. The union did not set an end date for the strike, and they plan to be on the line through the weekend while bargaining continues.
Oregonians will soon be able to renew their car tags at the local Fred Meyer. The Department of Motor Vehicles, or DMV, launched self-serve kiosks at certain Fred Meyer grocery stores across the state. If drivers choose to renew their registration at the kiosk, it will cost an extra $4.95 in fees, which goes to the company that makes the kiosk. DMV Administrator Amy Joyce said, quote, "We see these kiosks as a way to improve customer service, access, and equity. 7 days a week, anytime Fred Meyer is open, Oregonians can renew their registration and receive their tags immediately," end quote. Joyce also pointed out that some kiosks will accept cash too. Portland doesn't have a kiosk location yet, but other Oregon cities' Fred Meyers do. That includes Bend, Eugene, Happy Valley, Hillsboro, Medford, Oak Grove, Salem, and Tualatin. Many drivers let their registration lapse during the pandemic, as some law enforcement made it clear they wouldn't pull cars over for having out-of-date tags. But that is starting to change. The Portland Bureau of Transportation last year said they would start ticketing for out-of-date tags. The DMV hopes expanding where and when people can renew their tags will help with this problem.
Portland's new city councilors voted 10-2 to add new staffers and increase their office budget by $4.6 million on Wednesday. Members of the 12-person council had previously been limited to one staff member each and nine shared staff. The Government Transition Advisory Committee and the councilors were worried one staffer each wasn't enough. They were concerned about employee burnout, since those one-person staffs would be tasked with the work of many. Jamie Dunphy of District 1 says, quote, "The work may have changed, but the workload remains the same," end quote. Wednesday's vote to increase the staffing budget comes as the City of Portland faces a $100 million deficit for fiscal year 2025-26, based on the latest numbers. District 1 Councilor Loretta Smith said, quote, "Good governance costs," end quote. She won unanimous support to carry over a nearly $14 million budget surplus from contingency funds from 2023-2024's fiscal year. City leaders will have to make cuts elsewhere to fill the $100 million gap. Budget recommendations will be made public at the end of February for community feedback.
Ahead of President-elect Donald Trump's inauguration, thousands of people will take part in marches to express their concerns about a second Trump term. The main event in Washington, D.C. will include teams from an organization trained in keeping things peaceful without displaying any force. Mike Moen has more from St. Paul.
In Minnesota and Washington, D.C., marches will take place this weekend as President-elect Donald Trump nears the start of his second term. An organization specializing in building peace around the globe will have a presence. Nonviolent Peace Force, which has a location in Minnesota, was invited by organizers of the People's March to ensure demonstrators feel safe as they express their views. The group's Anna Zero says they'll take a nonpartisan approach in helping out. She considers Saturday's march a low-risk event, but adds they'll be on the spot to carry out de-escalation tactics if needed.
What we do is really about leaning into the humanity of other people, right? People often escalate because they're not being heard and because they feel vulnerable. So if we can reach out to that person proactively, if we see attention rising and listen to them, kind of divert the attention.
Zero says they'll also escort attendees as they depart if they're worried about personal safety should they encounter any threats. In 2017, before Trump's first inauguration, this event was called the Women's March, but has been rebranded as progressives worry about actions like mass deportations. Companion rallies are scheduled across the U.S., including a handful in Minnesota. Zero says preparation is key to setting a peaceful tone, noting they trained roughly 200 volunteers in recent weeks. She acknowledges in today's political climate it can be tricky to encourage tolerance, as a lot of people have strong feelings about where we are as a country. But she insists it's still worth it, even if it feels out of reach.
Sometimes the work of nonviolence can feel like, no, this isn't what we need. Our problems are too big. But that is exactly when we do need nonviolence, because when we see these fissures in our ability to relate to other human beings, nonviolence at its core is about being able to see that person for who they are.
She says building tolerance usually takes longer when teaching it to people surrounded by conflict. The weekend assistance won't foster deep political discussions if tension arises, but rather those on-the-spot efforts to lower the temperature. Saturday's marches in Washington, D.C. are scheduled to begin at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, but local events have different start times. This is Mike Moen for Minnesota News Connection.
Biden highlights the challenges faced reaching a Gaza ceasefire. Progressives urge action on the Equal Rights Amendment. And TikTok's fate is still up in the air. With those stories and more, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Yesterday, I announced a ceasefire, the hostage deal between Israel and Hamas. The road to that deal was not easy. It's taken 8 months of nonstop, relentless effort by the administration to get it done.
President Joe Biden highlighting a hard-won deal in Gaza during a Defense Department farewell ceremony. President-elect Donald Trump is also claiming credit for the ceasefire, citing his previous threat that there would be hell to pay if hostages weren't released by his inauguration. But the deal may still collapse. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is postponing a cabinet vote, accusing Hamas of adding last-minute conditions. Israeli critics accuse Netanyahu of repeatedly doing just that himself during the negotiations. Outgoing Missouri Progressive Representative Cori Bush is joining the Equal Rights Amendment Alliance in daily protests urging Biden to certify the ERA before Trump takes office.
This trauma, these injustices are happening every single day around the country and under your watch. But you don't feel the burn of it. You have the power to act. You can publish the ERA.
Nearly a quarter million Americans have signed petitions for the ERA to be enacted. Critics argue many of the state legislatures, which previously voted for the constitutional amendment, would not do so now. The fate of social media platform TikTok remains unclear, with a law banning it being challenged in court. Republican Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton says the app's owners had a chance to sell it and avoid a pending ban.
TikTok is a Chinese communist spy app that addicts our kids, harvests their data, targets them with harmful and manipulative content, and spreads communist propaganda.
Rural advocates are voicing concerns about Trump's healthcare policies, including his alignment with vaccine skeptics. University of Texas professor of medicine Jewel Mullen says more conspiracy theories may accelerate a decline in vaccinations.
It's just increasingly easy for information that is untrue, misleading, inaccurate, and unchecked. That's a risk for all of us.
Others say rural health is likely to worsen if Medicaid's budget is squeezed. Brittany Bolton with Groundwork Ohio says their hospitals and providers are hanging by a thread and depend on the program.
Provider shortages, hospital closures, and long travel distances across rural areas. At least 13 counties do not have maternal care in the entire county at this point in Ohio.
I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be clear, with an overnight low of 32 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be partly cloudy with a high of 45. Today in history, in 1961, President Eisenhower gives his farewell address, warning of the power that was being accumulated by the military-industrial complex. The quote of the day is from American author and inventor Benjamin Franklin, born on this day in 1706. He said, quote, "All wars are follies, very expensive and very mischievous ones. When will mankind be convinced of this and agree to settle their differences by arbitration? Were they to do it by even the cast of a die, it would be better than by fighting and destroying each other."
Supporters of Leonard Peltier are making a final clemency push to Biden in the last few days of his presidency. He is serving consecutive life terms and is in failing health. With that story and more, it's Brian Bull with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull, sit in for Antonia Gonzalez. With Joe Biden's term coming to a close, supporters of Leonard Peltier are urging the president to grant executive clemency. Peltier has been serving two consecutive life sentences for the murders of FBI agents Jack Culler and Ronald Williams in South Dakota in 1975. This Wednesday, representatives of Indian Collective and Amnesty International sent a letter to Biden, citing the number of tribal nations and leaders, Nobel Peace Prize laureates, and law enforcement officials who supported Peltier's release. This includes James Reynolds, the former U.S. attorney whose office oversaw Peltier's prosecution. Peltier is now 80 and is being held at a federal penitentiary near Orlando. An Anishinaabe Lakota tribal member, he is reportedly in poor health and requires a walker. The agent's deaths occurred during a shootout with American Indian Movement members. One A member, 23-year-old Joseph Stunt of the Coeur d'Alene tribe, was also killed. Tribes were mentioned several times during Thursday's U.S. Senate hearing for President-elect Donald Trump's nomination of former North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum for Secretary of the Interior Department. Senators on the Committee of Energy and Natural Resources said their support for Burgum's confirmation from the five tribes in his state and the coalition of large tribes. A letter of support was read from the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe of North and South Dakota. Much of the three-hour hearing focused on energy development. Public lands, water, and conservation were discussed. Democratic senators, including Maria Cantwell of Washington, were among those to mention tribal consultation. Burgum described how he sees it.
Spending time and going to the tribes, listening, sometimes listening for hours to really understand what the issues are. We achieved MOUs on law enforcement. I mean, some of the scarcest and most devastating law enforcement in this country right now is the lack of BIA agents on federal land. I mean, some of the tribal reservations have become harbors for criminal organizations because they know that we don't have enough resource there. And then our local county sheriffs, the state police, in many cases didn't have jurisdiction.
While the Department of the Interior manages the country's natural and cultural resources, it also oversees the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the Bureau of Indian Education. In South Dakota, a flag representing the Flandreau-Santee tribe is being displayed in the Capitol Rotunda following the tribe's announcement that it's lifting its ban against Governor Kristi Noem. Last year, all nine tribes located in the state banished the Republican governor from reservation lands. SDPB's Lee Strubinger has more.
In a letter dated January 14th, Flandreau-Santee Tribal President Anthony Reeder said the Republican governor met one of their stipulations contained in its banishment resolution, an apology. Reeder said Noem apologized in several meetings for comments she made last year about Native parents and kids, which for tribal officials was the final straw after a series of contentious exchanges. A spokesperson for the governor's office said multiple tribal members attended those meetings. Flandreau is the first tribe to lift its ban. The Flandreau tribe's flag is also the first to be displayed in the Capitol since the Rosebud and Standing Rock tribes displayed theirs almost a year ago. Both tribes asked their flags be removed following Noem's comments last year. The Secretary of Tribal Relations, David Flute, is encouraging other tribes to consider sending their flags to be displayed in the South Dakota Capitol. That, he said, would continue Noem's vision of having all nine tribal nations represented in the rotunda. The Flandreau tribal president wished Governor Noem luck ahead of her Senate confirmation hearing for the Department of Homeland Security. That hearing was scheduled for Friday morning. For National Native News, I'm Lee Strubinger in Pierre.
And I'm Brian Bull, hosting from KLCC in Eugene, Oregon.
President-elect Donald Trump's picks to lead the Department of Agriculture, Health and Human Services, and EPA could significantly change food systems in America. Legal experts say the pursuit of deregulatory policies and reduced oversight could hurt animals and humans alike. Catherine Carley reports.
America's food systems are predicted to undergo significant changes should President-elect Donald Trump's cabinet picks be confirmed. Nominees for the Departments of Agriculture, Health and Human Services, and the EPA have all stressed the need for deregulation. Yale Law School's Laura Fox says that can lead to reduced oversight and enforcement of environmental protections and safety standards.
And then de-emphasize or even denial of certain frameworks such as climate change, environmental justice issues. that are going to take a backseat or just be ignored.
Fox says each agency can determine the scope of enforcement action and what to prioritize. The EPA is currently studying the impact of factory farm waste on drinking water supplies, but additional restrictions on farm pollution are not expected from the next administration. President-elect Trump has tapped conservative attorney Brooke Rollins to head the USDA, which covers everything from food safety to rural development. Aside from her vocal opposition to Chinese ownership of American farmland, her views on agricultural issues are largely unknown. Fox predicts policy changes to increase slaughterhouse line speeds, which risk worker safety and animal welfare.
Probably anybody that's going to be coming into USDA in this administration, we're going to see deregulation, which affects animal welfare standards and treatment of animals at production facilities.
Fox says she expects Rollins to also push for the privatization of slaughterhouse inspections. Currently, federal employees check for violations of the Humane Methods of Slaughter Act. During the first Trump term, USDA proposed allowing facility employees to do it themselves, which Fox says would ultimately lead to fewer enforcement actions for animal abuse and safety violations. This story was produced with original reporting from Seth Milstein for Sentient. I'm Catherine Carley for Maine News Service.
Raw milk for human consumption is banned federally, but that hasn't stopped it from growing in popularity. Just how risky is it to drink raw milk? Zamon Perez has more on the story from Maryland.
Secretary of Health and Human Services nominee Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is a big supporter of raw milk. But some experts say more people drinking raw milk isn't a great trend for public health. Under federal law, it's illegal to sell raw milk, and most milk sold in the U.S. is pasteurized. That means it's heated to 161 degrees and then rapidly cooled to kill bacteria. All milk for public sale in Maryland must be pasteurized. Cornell University food safety professor Martin Weedman says it's difficult to keep all bacteria out of milk, so there's always some risk, whether cows are raised on factory farms or freely roaming in fields.
The risk is always there. A cow in a cave poops just like a cow in a pasture. They're going to potentially get dirty, their fecal material potentially contaminates the milk.
But Weedman says it's 100 times more risky to drink raw milk than pasteurized milk. He adds the possible health benefits cited by supporters of raw milk, like higher vitamin C content, just aren't worth the risk. Interest in raw milk has exploded in recent years, and internet searches for the term have grown steadily since 2021. Weedman says he drank raw milk growing up, but today he says it can be difficult to tell if milk is raw or not, and the wider consumption of raw milk products could mean a bigger burden on the healthcare system, with infections that range from listeria to Guillain-Barré syndrome.
If raw milk in your fridge, your kids have their friends over, they drink milk. Those kids have no idea they're drinking raw milk. Their parents have no idea that their kids drink raw milk. They get sick.
In recent months, avian flu has been found in mice and cats who drank raw milk, but it remains unclear if humans can contact avian flu from drinking contaminated milk. This story was produced with original reporting from Grace Hussein for Sentient. I'm Zamon Perez, Maryland News Connection.
The Oregon legislative session will begin next Tuesday on January 21st. A proposed bill would pause Oregon State Retirement Fund's investment in fossil fuels. The PAUSE Act is the latest attempt to move Oregon away from fossil fuels. The bill would introduce a 5-year ban on fossil fuel investments for Oregon's public employee retirement system. Advocates of the bill say divesting in fossil fuels is good for the climate and smart financially, citing poor returns last year. Isabel Charlet has more on the story.
A new bill aims to further reduce investments in fossil fuels by Oregon's public employee retirement system. The PAUSE Act would impose a 5-year ban on new investments by the system in private fossil fuel funds. Supporters believe this move will help lower emissions and keep wealth in Oregon communities. Andrew Bogrand with Divest Oregon helped draft the bill. The group found that PERS fossil fuel investments have underperformed the market by $4 to $10 billion over the past decade.
Private equity has taken advantage, in our view, of public pensions. And this would allow Treasury staff the time and space they need to kind of course correct.
Last year, former Treasurer Tobias Reed, now Secretary of State, introduced a plan to reduce PERS investments in fossil fuels by 60% by 2035, aiming for net zero emissions by 2050. Bogrand says the PAUSE Act aligns with that plan. Oregon PERS covers pensions for more than 415,000 public employees across schools, local governments, and 900 agencies. Divest Oregon says 60% of PERS funds are private private investments, which is almost double the average U.S. pension fund. Oregon's treasurer, the newly sworn in Elizabeth Steiner, manages the PERS investments totaling more than $100 billion. Steiner says moving away from fossil fuels is not just about reducing emissions. It's smart financially.
The data are really clear that carbon intensive investments are a risky proposition at this point, and that at some point in the not too distant future, they will not be profitable.
Steiner says it is too soon to say if she can support the PAWS Act, but she is having productive conversations with Divest Oregon. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
Rescue dogs in California are helping to sniff out scat to protect an endangered species. The dogs are helping to monitor the San Joaquin kit fox, which lives in a part of the state where solar farms are growing rapidly. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. The endangered San Joaquin kit fox lives in a part of Central California where solar energy is rapidly expanding. To ensure that solar farms do not harm the species, operators are required to monitor kit fox populations. But doing this is tough. This adorable but elusive fox is nocturnal, and it lives underground. So the job requires a team of experts. Specially trained rescue dogs who sniff out the kit fox scat or droppings. That scat is then sent for DNA analysis to identify the fox that produced it and determine if the animal is healthy. Pete Copolillo is with Working Dogs for Conservation. His team has been monitoring kit fox in the region for 2 decades.
Just like the children's book says, everybody poops. And so we don't have to catch them. We just find their scats. And that can tell us a tremendous amount about the population and how they're doing and how what we're doing affects them.
For example, how the density of solar panels or construction practices impact the fox. He says in general, he's found kit fox to be resilient to solar development.
So that's a really nice outcome because it means we can do both, make our energy more climate friendly and do it in a way that is wildlife friendly.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, January 17th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast.